Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 20 of Large Old Cup. My name is Corey, and you're here with me now. So what should we talk about on such a momentous occasion as episode 20? I'll be honest with you, I was not anticipating going 20 episodes. To be fair, sometimes projects and I don't last terribly long. You know, I was thinking, like, we'll get, like, 5-6 episodes and maybe it'll just fall off the map. And I'll be honest with you, there's been some inconsistencies, of course. There's been, like, month periods or so where I wasn't uploading anything. So we've been doing pretty good recently about getting that done. We've been focusing a little bit more on promoting the show and whatnot. I say we, but it's just me. And that's a good segue. So episode 20, we're going to discuss my mental illness. And it's topical because on Wednesday, I realized I was having a manic episode. So I was 27 years old when I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder type 2. It had been untreated for years before then. Really no telling how far back it was going. You know, and the fun thing about it, and let's, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, we're going to go to kind of just define what bipolar disorder type 2 is. Because there's two bipolar disorders. There's 1 and 2. So bipolar 2 is basically mood cycling between high and lows. The difference between 1 and 2 is that the up moods never reach the full-blown mania, and the lesser elevated moods in bipolar disorder type 2 are called hypomania. So I was in a hypomania state on Wednesday. Now, we're talking about, you know, it swings between one or the other. The other mood is basically manic depression. So because I have hypomania, which is not full-blown mania, it means that my depressive episodes are more frequent and more severe than maybe it would be in someone with bipolar type 1. So to kind of give you an idea of what a manic episode is, basically I am feeling euphoria in interesting ways. So, you know, and according to WebMD, these include flying suddenly from one idea to the next, having exaggerated self-confidence, rapid and uninterruptible and loud speech, and increased energy with hyperactivity and less need for sleep. This is probably something about, you know, bipolar type 2 that is kind of insidious to me. The lead up to a hypomania episode for me is gradual. It starts slow, and I don't realize it's coming until it's like a full-blown thing. So to kind of go back to the origins of it, I was seeing a therapist in my mid-late 20s, where I was dealing with some trauma and some CPTSD. And through the discussions and appointments, my therapist, basically after a lot of trial and error, we came to the conclusion that I am bipolar type 2 because of these episodes of hypomania and these large states of manic depression. So when I say, like, I had one of these episodes on Wednesday, pretty much what was happening is I got to work and I was seeing some colleagues I'd not seen since November, and I was, you know, basically teasing them as often I do. You know, there's a loud noise that's unrelated to us, and I will turn and blame one of my coworkers for it, and, you know, be aggressive and dismissive about it, you know. And they know me well enough to know that I'm joking, because I never tease anyone unless they know the deal. I don't like to do that. I think it's a dick move to manipulate people like that. So, you know, normally if I get to know you and I get the sense that you're going to be fine with it, I'll approach the waters. And if I get the go ahead, then we'll do it. So I'm teasing my coworkers, and were, you know, being loud and laughing. And at one point, I take my shirt off so they can see my new tattoo, which, you know, that probably should have been the clue that something was off, because I'm, like, taking my shirt off at work at my desk. Because I was just showing off my tattoo, and the sleeves on the shirt were long, you know. That should have been the clue. But my go-to recognition for when I'm in a place is when I start to notice my heartbeat faster and the tension that builds up inside of me. And it feels like it's in my sternum and creeping up my neck. And I always refer to it as my co-word for this, the thing, the sensation that I've described it as. If you've ever read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas by Dr. Hunter S. Thompson, in the very beginning, which starts with Raoul Duke and Dr. Gonzo traveling down the highway towards Las Vegas, fucked up on drugs and listening to the Rolling Stones, there's just no prompt whatsoever. Dr. Gonzo just yells out loud, "My heart feels like an alligator." And like that to me, that fit the feeling, because it feels like something has clamped down on my heart and is in a death roll. Like when alligators grab something and then like spin it and try to break its neck, you know? So I'm at work and I have the alligator moment and I go, fuck, you know, like this isn't necessarily great, because what's going to happen is I'm going to continue to be really loud and really talkative and really fast. And I'm going to jump from thing to thing and have way more energy than I know what to do with. And I'm in a new setting at work where I am now surrounded by tons of people where I wasn't previously. And like, I am going to do something or say something that somebody who does not know me is going to be really weirded out by. So after I've come to this realization, and I look over to the person who sits next to me, and I just say, "Hey, can you do me a favor? Can you keep an eye on me?" And you know, that prompted a very concerned look on her part, and I had to clarify, like, "Hey, I'm having a manic episode right now, and pretty much if I start talking really loud and really fast, just bring it to my attention. That way, I can tone it down." And I tell the other two people I work with, basically, you know, just keep an eye on me, make sure I don't go too far. And I reach out to my manager and I let her know the same deal. She's not in the same state that I'm in, you know, like physical state, location, geography. So I'm very upfront about it, because that's kind of my deal. I don't really give a shit about what people think about me and my mental illnesses and whatnot. That's, you know, I'm dealing with my shit. You know, they got a problem with it. It's exactly that. It's their problem. I don't care. So I'm working on, I contact her, and you know, whenever I get a new manager, it's usually one of the first things I tell them, like, "Hey, just heads up. You know, I have this, this is what it means. This is what it's going to look like. If I contact you about it, this is kind of what I mean." So I contact her and, you know, let her know, like, "Hey, if it gets bad, I'm going to leave, because I don't want to, you know, do something like that." And then like the room started to feel really like crowded, because there's way too many people and there's no privacy in this new location. So there's like not a room that I can go in and have this conversation with her. And it was just thoroughly unpleasant. So I ended up like coming home at the end of work, and I had the option of I could fall asleep on the couch or I could go to the gym. And I went, gym's a better idea, because I have all this energy. I'm going to go and throw myself into physical exertion and see if I can wear it out. So I spent 2 hours in the gym, spent about 90 minutes doing cardio, and the remaining time doing like some sort of weight training, just trying to exhaust myself. And I got back, and it didn't happen. And instead what happened is my whole body decided to lock up. Like every muscle in my body got incredibly tense. And that was something I dealt with, and people kind of were helping, whether they realized it or not that they were helping, but it was very lovely of them to do so. And yeah, no, I just at that point passed the fuck out. And then the next morning I overslept because my body was just really tired and really sore because of, you know, physical exertion and then every muscle in my body locking up. So I mentioned like there's a soft lead up to when this happens. The past few days before then, I was noticing a couple of things. I didn't need to eat as much. I also didn't need to sleep as much. And I was also getting more and more irritable and frustrated when things weren't happening fast enough. I was getting impatient. You know, I'm a big comic book guy. I have a show about comics with my friends called The Smart Avengers. And there is this one comic from the 90s for X-Factor in which the character Quicksilver, who has super speed, is in a therapy session because it was called the issue was called Examinations. Great fucking issue of X-Factor written by Peter David. Basically, all the members of the team have to go to therapy and discuss their various, you know, issues. And Quicksilver puts this analogy perfect. It's like you've ever been standing in line at an ATM and the guy in front of you doesn't know how the machine works. They don't know how much money they want to draw out. They fumble with their card trying to get out of their wallet. And every small delay is just keeping you further and further and further from the next thing you have to do. And it just drives you crazy. And he's like, that's the world I live in all the time because I move way faster than everyone else. I think faster than everyone else. And this is what's happening. So that was kind of like the equivalent to it. I was dealing with getting this irritability because things weren't happening fast enough, you know? So I didn't recognize it at the time, as I seldom do until like I'm already full blown in it. And that's, it's never a great realization, but like usually what happens is if I can recognize it's happening, I can kind of tone it down. Kind of like, you know, when I told my coworkers, hey, just kind of keep an eye on me. If I'm getting a little too much, let me know. And I'll try my best to to put it down. So, like I said, that's, those are the hypomanic episodes. They're kind of the most destructive ones. I don't know when this started, because like I said, it's so gradual. And it could have started a month ago, for all I know. Or, you know, weeks before that, too. Like I said, because these episodes last, and they build, and they build, and they build, and then they just happen. And sometimes they get kind of brought on because I swing too hard in the opposite direction. And it's like a course correction. You know, there have been some really intense bouts of manic depression and self-loathing and not seeing a future for myself and hopelessness and whatnot. So, you know, we swung in the opposite direction real hard. And yeah. So to kind of, you know, touch back on that, I do want to put across that I am medicated for it. I have been taking Lamictal for over a decade now. So I take 200 milligrams, I believe. Actually, I have the bottle in front of me. Yep, 200 milligrams. I take that daily. And what it does is it's kind of a mood stabilizer. What it keeps the manic depressive episodes from getting too severe because, yeah, you know, and if this is something that's going to bother you, by all means, please click out. But, you know, if it goes too bad, then we deal with suicidal thoughts. I mean, that's just that, you know. So the mood stabilizer keeps me from going to that far of a depth. And it also keeps the hypomanic episodes from happening frequently, you know, or at least leveling things out. So basically, it's not a cure. It's not going to make me perfect and good and happy. It's what it's going to do is it's going to keep things in a manageable state where the lows aren't too low and the highs aren't too high. And it keeps me steady for the most part. So I've been dealing with this for over 10 years now, and it is what it is. I've experimented with stuff before, like they've increased they increased the dosages, and sometimes that it didn't work as well, or it worked a little too good and I swung really hard or whatnot. But there was a period of time where I started to question reality, and question what was true and what was real. And so I had somewhat convinced myself that I did not have bipolar disorder, that it was just a result of my my CPTSD coming out, and that I was, I don't need to take a mood stabilizer. So I just stopped taking my medication for a while. And I think I stopped taking it for about 6 months. And yeah, it turns out I needed it because it was a very gradual decline. You know, it was the undoing of a man, so to speak. And, you're not supposed to do things like that, but assholes like to test the limits, That's pretty much what happened. And, I recognized eventually, okay, yep, this isn't good. I obviously do need it. It's kind of like that episode of SpongeBob where he's trying to convince himself that he doesn't need water to breathe, and he starts to dry out. And he's like, you don't need it, you don't need it, you don't need it. And he certainly screams out, I do need it. That was kind of what happened. And, I, of course, after medication for a week or so, I started to level out again, and we were totally fine again. So let's talk about the stigma behind bipolar disorder. As somebody who has it, I am incredibly blunt and open about it, as you can tell. I'm talking about it very frankly, because it is what it's something I deal with. It's something I have. It's something that's never going to go away. Like this is me for the rest of my life, is managing this problem. And, that used to really bum me out for a while, but it's you accept it and you push forward. So that's what I did. And because it is such just part of my life, like I said, I don't really care to talk about it. I'm very upfront with people. If you become my manager, you're going to have to deal with it maybe at some point. So why am I not going to just tell you up front, like, hey, this is a thing I deal with. Sorry, So I there was a day at work where I was talking about it with coworkers, and I was just very upfront, and another woman on my floor asked if I could come into a separate room and talk to her. And I was like, okay, I've officially made someone uncomfortable. Because sometimes, and that's like the thing, there's this big buzzword in business every now and then, and it might be dead now, because the world of business and culture and stuff moves and shifts so often. But there was this big push to bring your authentic self to work. And what I have learned is that you can be a little too authentic for some people at times, and they get real turned off about it. So that's why I was thinking, okay, I've officially made someone uncomfortable. And so we went into the separate room. I'm kind of preparing to apologize, and deal with probably this person reporting me to management and then having to have a conversation with them about, hey, Corey, sometimes people don't need to hear everything. But instead, she told me that earlier that week, her daughter had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and they had both been really worried and kind of freaking out because they thought it was going to make them pariahs and that people weren't going to trust them or think ill of them automatically if they found out, or that basically she was damaged and going to be broken her whole life. And, she told me that, and made me pretty sad because that thought does exist out there. There are people who deal with their mental illness and they aren't very upfront about it because it's something they feel like they should be ashamed of. And that's sad and unfortunate that we as a society, it is a shame that we have made people feel like they can't be upfront and talk about things like that. So she told me all this information, and then she told me that because I was so upfront about it and I didn't seem to be scared talking about it, it made her feel like maybe things were going to be okay for her daughter, and that she wanted to thank me for it. And then she gave me a really big hug, which was the total opposite of how I thought the interaction was going to go, and then B, incredibly sweet. And like I said, and it's because of this stigma that we've associated with bipolar disorder. Anytime there's a mass shooting in America, 9 times out of 10, that's one of the things they bring up. They were bipolar. And as somebody with that, you look at it and you go, man, this is what we're advertising. So, like, if somebody finds out, are they going to automatically think that I am going to one day commit mass murder? You know, because, like, every person who, you know, does something like that, they've got a mental illness, they got bipolar disorder, you can't trust them. And, you know, somebody, I was talking about it again very bluntly at work yesterday because I, you know, up front, I was like, hey, I had a hypomanic episode on Wednesday. Sorry if I was being really loud. And they were like, oh, it's really nice that, like, we're moving towards removing that stigma. And it's like, it's nice that we're removing the stigma, but I'm also not naive. I know it's never going to go away. I know there's people who's always going to be judgmental about it and assume the worst about it. But that's, again, not my problem. I've been embracing returning to my roots of being a punk. I've been enjoying it. It feels like home, and it feels like a place I've not been in a very long time. I'm not one of those people that thinks home is where your family is. Home is where you put yourself. And for me, home was throwing myself into this counterculture and music and look and embracing this attitude of, I really don't care what anyone thinks about me, because I did live for a good couple of years thinking that, because I was in the setting where your reputation mattered. And yeah, my reputation mattered, and people still thought it was fucking weird. So fuck them, you know? I'm just going to be weird on the outside as well as the inside, and they're going to have to deal with it. But to kind of return to just dealing with bipolar disorder, it's something, like I said, it's not something I'm ashamed of. It's something I've owned. I'd have no idea how long I've really had it. I know I was diagnosed at 27. I remember being like this when I was a teenager, though, and going through these periods of incredibly low self-loathing and insecurity and needing reassurance from people because I had no faith or trust in myself. And I was dealing with a lot of really hardcore stuff at home that maybe one day I'll have an episode on, and that'll be a really intense episode. But I'd also have these periods where I was really loud and talkative. And then afterwards I would reflect extremely on those periods of time and think of, like, wow, I absolutely made a fool of myself, and I've made people uncomfortable, and no one's going to treat me seriously anymore. You know, and that's really intense thoughts when you're like a teenager, like to have such low self-worth that you feel like you can't even trust your social interactions. So, you know, and I also remember having these intense manic depressive states as a child. You know, my mother called me Charlie Brown as a kid because I was a depressed little kid, you know, like Charlie Brown. I was sad a lot in depressed and wondered why everybody hated me. Yeah, and I don't want to be a bummer about this. Like you said, I'm not trying to say I'm going to remove the stigma. I'm just going to be upfront and blunt about it. I have a mental illness. It's with me for the rest of my life. Yes, it's medicated, but the medication is not a cure. It's only going to lower symptoms. It's only going to make it manageable, because that's what Lamictal is. It just is a mood stabilizer, and it's nice and great, and it's been lovely. But yeah, I'm just going to be upfront about it with people, because there's no point in hiding it. So with all that being said, like I said, this is episode 20 of Large Old Cup. We're going to just be very frank about mental illness and whatnot, because why the fuck else will we not? And lately I have been forgetting to do my music recommendation in the episode itself, and then have to go on Instagram and be like, oh, by the way. So I'm going to cut out some time and make sure that I actually do the music recommendation today. Today, the music recommendation is from a band called The Evens. The Evens are a very interesting group for me because the composition. So The Evens are a two-person band. They are a married couple. One person is Amy Farina, and she's a drummer and has, you know, she played with the Warmers, Mr. Candy Eater, Ted Leo, and the Pharmacists. And then she formed this band with her husband, Ian MacKay, which if you know anything about Ian MacKay or anything about hardcore, Ian MacKay is like a godfather, you know? Not only was he the frontman for Minor Threat, which is they birthed the straight edge movement and the straight edge, you know, genre of hardcore, but he was also an incredibly important and largest part of the band Fugazi. So, you know, this is his band he formed after Fugazi went on hiatus in the late 90s, early 2000s with his spouse. So they're kind of indie rock. They're a little punk. You know, she plays the drums, he plays guitar and sings, and they're a very lovely group. And the song that I'm recommending from the Evens is the song Cut from the Cloth. Cut from the Cloth was released in 2006, and it is a... I don't want to say it's a depressing song. I think it's just very soft. But the whole point of the song is, like, being surprised at a culture that will put people in power that are so far removed from their best interests, which I think is incredibly topical for the world that we live in now. You know, I'm not going to get too political, but a party was elected and put into power on this promise of, we're going to lower gas prices, we're going to lower grocery bills, and what have they done? They have talked about trying to force Canada into becoming a state, as well as Greenland, and renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. They have completely gone this opposite direction, and they do shit like that for one reason and one reason only, is just bullshit misdirection, like a con artist, like someone playing the little shell game. You know, they are misleading people by distracting them from what they had originally promised. So Cut from the Cloth has a song, or a lyric in it is, why would they fold up something so precious? Why would they sing in favor of their own defeat? Maybe they found their voice while out shopping. The price was hard to beat. So that's, like I said, that's going to be the recommendation. I love Ian MacKay. Like I said, he's the godfather of everything. He's the godfather of DIY culture. I mean, if you've seen any sort of like hardcore or punk documentary, Ian MacKay is going to be right there. He's going to be there talking about, like, you know, when Minor Threat, we were making their own albums, they... You know, we're making their own album sleeves by cutting them open and, like, tracing the pattern and folding and gluing them shut themselves. You know, like I said, he's of this belief of, like, why can't we do everything we want to do? Why can't we just fucking go for it? And if that's not an inspiration to you, I really don't know what to say. Because it's true, we should just fucking go for it. You know, boldly go in the direction of the thing that scares you, because it's going to be where the most growth is. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of pain there too, but that's how we learn. We learn from pain and discomfort. So with that all being said, I hope that you're all being recklessly brave. I hope you're all being delusionally confident. I hope you're all out there just kind of having fun and behaving yourselves and figuring your shit out. Also, Ian MacKay, big fashion icon for me with the shaved head and the beanie that covers only part of his head. I stole that from him egregiously. And it's such an important part of my look anymore. So I'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.